read descriptions of the Iranian economy at this time that, you know, after 75, when oil prices were skyrocketing, a sort of inflationary boom that triggered all kinds of problems, like the shortages, income inequality was aggravated, there's overcrowding in the cities like Tehran, bottlenecks of the ports, which you mentioned earlier. Currently, this led to a lot of some popular economic resentment, about economic conditions in the country and in the city of Tehran generally. Did you see much evidence of resentment? You mentioned the question of the Brazari and their their apprehension about the price control issue. Besides that, though?
Businessmen, industrialists generally found doing business very difficult. Mainly because you know, the port facilities were so badly organized, the transportation system was so overtaxed that getting their supplies in, and especially if they were in something like you know, housing, construction, that sort of thing, getting cement supplies in competition with government, very difficult indeed. And I. Talking to someone the other day, who the heck was it? Oh, I know. They were involved in building the national telecommunications system, the microwave system. There was the Northrop project, not the Page project. And he was complaining that to his friend that, you know, every time I turned around, I found my cement being delivered to this housing project that was had the Shah's family's protection or involvement. And the guy who was building that says, no way, I didn't get any of that. There's no way. Apparently, you were just being taken by one of the truck drivers who was selling it twice. But yeah, it was very difficult. And I mean, and government action would solve things on occasion. The Savak would order 1,000 trucks to go down to the port and bring back cement or other supplies that were necessary. There were shiploads of live sheep would be offloaded in Banda Shapur, and no one was there to take care of them. And of course, that was a great hassle. What do you do with 50,000 sheep overnight?
I think I've also read that, and that's, I guess, in the wake of the Shah's anti-inflation campaign led by the Rastafari Party, that there was a lot of capital flight.
Yeah, well, they opened up the opened up. Yeah, sure, there was capital flight.
Was that an indication of sort of declining confidence in the regime or something?
Well, no, it was just that. Any prudent Iranian or Middle Easterner in that kind of a euphoric situation would automatically find a few, toss a few anchors to the windward. Some of them had a lot of money abroad, always. Others had enough to take care of themselves. A few, I knew, refused to do it and ended up on the short end of the stick. They were genuine patriots. Our life is here, and we're going to keep it here. So,
did your Iranian business and economic official friends what did they think of the arms purchase program by this point?
Did they have problems with it? Yeah, they had problems. But what are we going to do? What are these guys going to do with it? No, there's just a great amount of doubt that it could be effectively used, and who were they going to use it against? Although they did sort of take a little pride in the Appamusa operation and so on.
From the Persian Gulf.
Yeah.
From what I've read, the Rastafari Party, or the Resurgence Party in English, had two wings. There's a progressive wing, which I guess is more nationalistic and more supportive of government intervention in the economy.
It was all window dressing.
Yeah.
this wasn't really,
yeah.
People were assigned to the wings. It wasn't because
there weren't any actual.
There wasn't any real choice, no.
It was supposed to be a constructive wing, which was more internationalist and more towards economic liberalism. But that was a totally artificial.
Totally artificial, not sure.
Yeah.
That was my understanding of it. I think if you ask some of the Iranians around here, they'd tell you the same thing.
So these wings are not really reflective of the real views of the, of
no.
the participants.
Well,
in the, you know.
Jamshid Musigar, uh-huh. who was the head of the party, a year or two before had told me, he says, I have nothing to do with politics. I am not a politician. I will not join any party.
Uh-huh.
And the next thing you knew, there he is heading the damn thing, because the Shah told him to.
What did you, I guess this the party was formed before you actually arrived, came back to Tehran. I think it was formed in March of 75.
Yeah.
But what did you make of it?
Well, I figured it was just more of the same situation that, you know, the two parties had had before, the, you've forgotten the names, they're so memorable, were artificial as well.
Yeah.
I knew Amari, who was the head of the one party, the opposition party, to them. But there was hope in the, when they had the two parties that one day the system would grow into real democracy. But with the advent of the decision to create the Rasahis party with the two wings, you know, all of those hopes were dashed. They all played at it, but there was not a real political movement.
Now, you mentioned earlier the Shah's efforts to sort of police the Shah's efforts to the members of the Rasahis party to police the bazaar,
yeah.
in terms of price controls and so forth. Does this have an impact on U.S. corporations that were active in Iran, this anti-inflation campaign? Did it have any impact on corporate operations?
I don't think so. No, this was more addressed to those things that affected the average Iranian's daily life. The cheap plastic shoes, the green vegetables, the oranges, and things of that sort, fruits. Chicken.
Just basic consumer.
Yeah, basic consumer items.
Consumer necessities.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, around the same year, in 75, the Shah also implemented a law for the expansion of industrial property to require large corporations, it's Iranian and foreign, to sell 49% of their shares to their employees.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the Shah saw this as a way to head off labor trouble in the future.
Yeah.
The same law, I guess, also restricted foreign participation in joint ventures. They could only hold a small percentage of the investment stake in Iran. How did American corporate investors react to these laws?
You know, that law in effect was never really applied. Never had a chance. I mean, there was a lot of talk about it. This was one of the efforts of the U.S. Iran Joint Business Council was to try to smoke out of the government how they were going to implement these decrees, because they were decrees. And the implementation orders, by the time the revolution came along, were never really, they'd never really been put into effect. A lot of companies jumped in and said, sure, here are our shares, we'll give them to the workers, and so on. So some of them made shows of handing out certificates, but it was, again, it never really became effective.
I recall reading somewhere that the B.F. Goodrich pulled out of Iran because of one of these laws or something, or they reduced their operations, or...
No, B.F. Goodrich was undergoing its own problems at the time, and they did pull out, but I don't remember the approximate cause, frankly. I think it had more to do with repatriation of profits and capital than anything else.
So they're all business problems.
Yeah.
Well, repatriation of profits could have involved the question of government regulation.
Yeah.
In terms of,
but you know, when they freed the exchange controls, the question didn't arise.
And one last question that we break up for today. In March 76, David Rockefeller and a group of around 50 American bankers I think Industrial South still came to Iran, came to Tehran. To
Jack Parker, the vice chairman of GE there, and Tom Burlingame, the senior vice president for international, was there. And I attended the conference as well.
So it was like a delegation designed to discuss investment issues in Iran?
And, you know, Bob Aboud and Don Regan and all kinds of cats were on that one.
What motivated this delegation to come to Iran? Was there some kind of concern about the business climate, or just an effort to just find
an effort to find a way to, help recycle oil money to ensure the Americans were getting his fair share of Iranian investment money. And David Rockefeller was always liked to be seen with the other Shahs of the world. And he's a nice fellow. I mean, he really did the first. Let me tell you something about that. I was instrumental in briefing the delegation before the conference began, and I spent half an hour on the corruption issue. Telling him that this was a real, real problem and getting worse. And so they took it to heart, in a sense, Taher Ziyai and David Rockefeller and I don't know who else got together and discussed the problem and agreed that they would not discuss corruption, they would not mention corruption at all. Well, that was all right until the last dinner. When Prime Minister Hoveyda was addressing the assembled magnates and accused all the American businessmen of corrupting the poor Iranians by offering them money, and the Iranians couldn't resist the temptations that we put in their way. But we were a reaction to that one.
Apparently the Rockefeller Group was also interested in trying to set up an international money market in Iran.
Yes, that was the focus of the discussion, was trying to bring Iran into the international financial world. But my recollection of the general conclusion was that the Iranian system was not developed enough yet to make sense. The stock market was not really functioning in a real way. The banks were not efficient enough, and there simply wasn't enough fundament there to make it. But the view of the future was that they could get there, and that this was something that they were trying to bring the Iranian government and financial world to do over time. I don't think anybody had any illusions when they came, but this was going to happen very soon. Least of all the Iranian bankers.
Now, was the Rockefeller Group, were they concerned about these degrees? Share participation and
they wanted to know what it was all about, and that was early days, and they really didn't get much illumination, my recollection. It was a fun conference in a way, because I've never seen so many senior American businessmen together in one place before.
Okay. Well, we'll stop for today, and then finish up the next time around.
Okay, very good.
Okay. Could I have-